All right, hi everybody, and welcome to lecture 46 in this ancient history program of History at Our House for the elementary class. Today we're going to return to the story of Sparta. Just before I get started here, I wanted to acknowledge that I forgot to do something as we return to classes here in this new calendar year. I also have to get back into the rhythm of things, and I forgot to produce the little self-test that I've been creating up until the break, which I think can help people in their classroom activities. I've been noticing that Patrick, here in our own house, has benefited from having this little questionnaire to answer as he listens to the lecture. So if you haven't been taking the self-tests, I am going to return to producing them. I'm just going to have to get back into that rhythm, as I said. And I recommend that you try it out. I think it can help you to pay attention and help you to get some of the crucial points out of each of the particular lectures. Okay, so getting back to the context that we are recapturing here, it has a big picture and it has a more specific context that we need to know. So the big picture is ancient history. What is it good for? What does it consist of? Where does the story of Sparta fit in that? So that comes with a timeline. So let's fill in a few more of the details of the timeline. We're not going to make an effort to complete the timeline based on as a review here today. I think we'll just kind of fit it in at the beginning of each class. And then we're going to turn it into a facts practice exercise again. So we'll do a couple minutes of that. And then we'll get back to the various forms of government and what Sparta had in terms of those governments. So Sparta had features of different kinds of government, as we've seen. And what we're going to do today to get us closer to the answer, not quite there, but very close to the answer of what was the Spartan government, is we're going to look at the life of a Spartan. We're going to look at the details, because we do know, in fact, how Spartans lived. And it is a fascinating thing to look at, especially from our modern times, from the way, as a comparison to how we live. I think there will be some things there that will really shock you and fascinate you. So I'm looking forward to pursuing that. So let's get a few more features of our orientation that we've been working on completed here. We have been navigating our way back from where we are over here back into the ancient past. And we're doing that because we want to understand our world better. We want to understand that the life that we see around us comes from somewhere. People made it so. And one of those features that I think you will have noticed by this point is, for instance, a very interesting thing to observe and to connect to history is the fact that Americans are going to be voting this year. Now I can say this year as opposed to next year. Right? Americans are going to be voting this year to choose what? What are they going to be voting for? Not sure how many of you guys are perhaps aware of this and paying attention to it. And what are they going to be voting about, Opal?
For a new president.
What? Okay, so the president is, and the president is what?
A leader.
Okay, the leader of the American government, right? And the American government is a very specific kind of government, and it does involve periodic elections where officials are chosen to have certain responsibilities and perform certain functions in that government. And yeah, the most important function of all in the American government is that of president. And Americans have had this uninterrupted tradition of voting every 4 years for a president. So that is quite a remarkable thing, an amazing accomplishment of the founding fathers, in a sense, that they built a system that has lasted this long and continues to work this way. And of course, you know, the idea that Americans vote for a president is a very interesting one. Most people connect it to this. Of course, why? Because it involves voting. But the part that they don't know about, because they don't study history enough, or sadly, history teachers are so bad at teaching it, is that if you're voting for a president, guess what that involves? This over here. So it's kind of, American history doesn't happen unless you have both of these anchor facts. We really will see, and the combination of all of the things that the Greeks and the Romans did. So that's why, if we think of this chart as kind of like a set of roots, over here is the present, and we have these flowerings in the present day. And they are growing and they're in the sunshine over here. The roots extend back down deep underground, and there's a long set of roots that go to American history and then European history, and then where the real nutrients come from in the soil is way back here in ancient history. So that's why we study it, because it has such an important impact on why we live the way we do. So apart from government, what's that other thing that is such an important heritage from ancient Rome in particular? Not from ancient Greece, but something that happened in ancient Rome. And it is the reason why the calendar is the way that it is. And it's the reason why a lot of things in life are the way that they are. What's another anchor fact that's our tick mark here? That's zero, but it's not quite zero, because historians have figured things out a little bit more correctly. Patrick?
Jesus Christ was born.
Okay, right. And historically speaking, we're pretty accurate about these things. When did that happen?
Circa 4 BC.
Yes, right. Okay, so let's mark that, because that is absolutely an anchor fact of history. If you try to understand European history or American history without talking about Christianity, you will not be able to make any sense of it. So absolutely, this is another thing that is an ancient root of the way that we live today. And then, well, we added one more anchor fact so far to finish out the picture of ancient Greece. And that's where we'll stop for today as far as adding more anchor facts. And that was the very beginning of Greek history. It's an anchor fact in a couple different ways. One, it's the beginning of the story of the rise of Athenian democracy. So if we want to understand, well, how did the Greeks get to democracy, we need to look at the beginning of the story and what was life like then and watch the rise. That's what we're going to talk about again on Thursday, right? This idea that how did it happen? And so we know where things started by knowing when Greek history got started. That's one of the anchors of history is always when you're studying history is, well, where did it start? Where did things start? That's why we have Menes and Armor, right? Because we know as far back as we can see, when do we know things got started in ancient Egypt? That's as far back as we can go. So the same thing applies to Greece. And then the other thing about this anchor fact about ancient Greece that is also belongs on our timeline is that it's also something that we do today and that we value today, that is a heritage of Greece. So does anybody remember what it is? I'm going to give you a hint by telling you when it happened. What did the Greeks do in 776 BC that, well, we still copy them every 4 years, just like the Greeks? Rosetta?
The Olympics?
Yeah, the first Olympic Games. So this is a very interesting fact. It's not as if like the world changed just because there were Olympics. But what it shows us is what Greece was when it was born. And one of the things about Greece, which is a good place for us to finish off for today in introducing today's subject, right, is that Greece was not a unified country. What was it? It was a bunch of somethings. What word do we call those when you have, some people know already, but I want to see more hands up. When a country is as small as a city. Sigourney?
City-states!
Ah, Greece was a bunch of city-states. And Athens was one of them, the most wonderful and most spectacular of all. But on the other hand, there were others. Sparta was another one. And we have seen this very peculiar Spartan city-state. We've been trying to decipher what it was like. And so, let's get to it. So, quickly here, Sparta was kind of like a monarchy. What's a monarchy? Quickly, come on, all the hands go up. Patrick, what's a monarchy?
The rule of one.
Okay, but it wasn't quite like a monarchy because, very interesting, wait, there were two kings. What do we call that, folks? Very peculiar type of government. Julia?
A duarchy.
Yeah, that was a very strange thing. Now, there was no democracy in Sparta, so we're not going to talk about people that all have the right to equal rights to participate in government, because we know the commoners did not have equal rights. In fact, we learned that the commoners of Sparta and the slaves, we're going to forget the names now because I decided we're not going to bother with those names. We're just going to call them commoners and slaves. Okay? They had no rights at all. If you were walking down the street and you looked at a Spartan sideways, well, that's it. He could just impale you on his sword and go on his merry way. So what do I mean? I'm exaggerating, but the point is that commoners and slaves had no rights whatsoever. And so it was, in a way, a kind of aristocracy. Quick, somebody tell me, what's an aristocracy? Rosetta?
Oh, the best.
Okay. Well, the word aristos means the best. Right? And so the Spartiati, the group, the class, we could call it, were considered themselves the best. We're going to learn today why they thought they were the best and how they kept themselves the best, because they were very serious about it. They didn't take that lightly. There was kind of an aristocracy in Sparta. And there was another interesting dimension to the government. Just one more reminder here before we look more closely at some of the features of Spartan life. One of the things was interesting about the duarchy, that the two kings had to agree on everything. And what do we call that? When in a government, you take the various powers and you divide them up. Two different expressions are used to refer to that. And there's an American expression and there's a general expression. What do you call that when you take a government and you break up the various powers? Two different phrases. Anybody know them? That one has slipped in our memories here. So one of them is called the separation of powers. What do you think it's good for? To separate the powers. Remember when we talked about the benefits and the potential harms of having two kings? If we're thinking about the rights of people, why would it be good to have two kings that have to agree? Why would it be good? Rosetta?
One could go off to war and the other could stay.
Well, that was a useful, practical thing about having two kings, but not necessarily related to rights, right? If we're trying to look for something that's positive, something that, say, the founding fathers would look back and they would say, hey, let's do that in our new republic, right? They would say, look at that. That's the separation of powers. Let's do that because it's good for rights. What would they look at there and say, see how that works? What would they look at with two kings that have to agree? Why is that good?
Because
Well, if a king's going to be a tyrant, what's going to happen? Opal?
Well, one king can't just do whatever he wants. They have to agree on it, which makes it less likely that they'll just be, like, not really ruling well. Because they have to both agree to be a tyrant, if that's what happens.
Okay, exactly. Really good. Really well said, right? Less likely. Is it some kind of magic? Oh, look, all of a sudden we have two kings. Life is perfect, right? Well, we separated the powers. Everything's okay. No, what you said, Opal, is exactly right. It's less likely. You're setting up an arrangement that makes it less likely. And the Founding Fathers understood this very well about the separation of powers. And so, less likely. And on top of that, the Spartans were pretty good about this too. And they realized, well, having two kings is not good enough. So they had five ephors. Five officials whose job it was to protect the laws of Sparta and make sure that the kings followed the law. So here then becomes a very interesting, this is kind of where we left off if I recall, right? What do we call it when you have a set of laws that even the king must follow? So let's say there's one king, it's a monarchy. If it's two kings, well, it's a duarchy. But what do you call it when there's a set of laws and even the two kings are not above the law? Give you guys a hint. The Magna Carta would be an example of that in English history, but not with two kings, with only one. Patrick?
Constitutional monarchy.
Okay, but here we have two kings, so it's...
constitutional duarchy.
Okay, is that where we're at? Is that what the Spartan government was? Well, now, today, we're going to look at the life of a Spartiate. So, Spartiatai means the group, and a single individual within that group would be a Spartiate. Okay, so what was life like? Or in modern English, we would just say the life of a Spartan. Okay, so what was it like to live as a Spartan? Well, the nice and cozy part of being a Spartan was that, and now, by the way, I have to immediately make a little distinction. It was completely different for boys and girls. So nowadays, right, we are increasingly of a mind that we want boys and girls to be able to think of, you know, their opportunities and what they can choose and what they can do to be completely free in that case, right? And equal. And so, yeah, we don't usually think of, including the military, right? Nowadays, there recently were two women that completed Army Ranger training, which is special forces. So, like, that's the highest level of achievement of being a soldier. And now women are doing that, too. And so that's, and of course, in terms of intellectual abilities, women are obviously equal to men. They're doctors and they're lawyers. And there's a woman who's the president, the chancellor of Germany. And we have a woman, Hillary Clinton, who wants to be the president of the United States. So in our modern society, we don't think of men and women as being unequal in that way. But in Sparta, we're going to see that's definitely not the case. So when we talk about the life of a Spartan, we're going to spend most of our time talking about the men. But we will talk about the women as well, because it's also an interesting set of things going on about them. So let's talk, first of all, for children in general, life was pretty cozy, as it is, I think, for most people, up until age 7. You got to spend your life with mommy until age 7. However, at age 7, you left home for good. So, I don't know how old everybody here is in the class, right? So, think about when you were 7. And if you had been a Spartan, that's it. You would leave home. And go where? What do I have to do? I have to leave home when I'm 7 years old? What would happen? Well, the government would come get you. And they would put you in a public school. And back then, it meant something a little bit different. Now we have things called public schools, right? But thankfully, there's also such a thing as private schools and homeschools and all kinds of wonderful choices because we have a free country. But Sparta was not like that. At age 7, you went to public school and you never went back home. You didn't go home at the end of the school day. You stayed there. You lived in public school with all the other kids, age 7 and up, the boys. Like I said, we'll talk about the girls later. So you lived at school permanently from age 7 onwards. And, well, what kind of education did you get at Spartan Public School? Well, you didn't get reading, writing, and arithmetic. You got mostly physical education, which means exercise. Lots of it. Why? Because in Sparta, your mind was not the most important thing. It was your body, the physical power of you as a warrior that mattered the most. So the most important part of education was physical education, to make you tough. You were not fed very well. You had one cloak and you were expected not to complain when it was cold at night. And you were not fed very well. In fact, it was one of the tricks of the way that the school worked was you didn't really get enough food. So since you didn't get enough food, what, as a child, were you going to try to do? Patrick?
Get exercise more to get more?
No, you couldn't earn it by exercising. No, the good guess, but no. You just had to do what everybody else was doing, and you got some food, but not an awful lot. So if you were a child and you weren't getting enough food, what would you do, Opal?
Steal it?
Uh-huh, yes. Yeah, that's exactly right. You were. This was part of the way that the curriculum was designed. It was designed to turn you into a clever, agile warrior who learned how to do things like steal if necessary, right? Turned you into a resourceful person who could solve the problems that you had to solve in life, and life, of course, being very hard. And so there was no pampering in Sparta. So yes, children were, in a sense, encouraged to steal because they were not fed enough. And of course, if you were caught, then you were flogged. But so you weren't, the lesson in Sparta was not, well, the lesson was don't steal. But of course it was, well, if you have to steal, don't get caught. I've heard that, I can't remember, I saw that in a movie recently, and or in a commercial or something, and that really was a Spartan attitude as well. So, designed to turn you into a tough little kid. Right? Either you're going to successfully steal food, or you're not, and therefore, you're not going to have a lot of food, and you're going to get tough that way. Or you get flogged, and you get tough that way. Either way, you're going to get tough. Right? So this is the purpose of a Spartan education, is to turn you into a tough person. And so this was the main idea. And then as you got older, you would start to be taught some other subjects, mostly music and poetry, that were designed to encourage you to be tough. Because art can inspire, right? What was the purpose of Spartan art? Well, it was to inspire you to be a greater warrior. And I have a sample of Spartan poetry for you. You might enjoy doing this as a homeschool project. You might ask your mom or dad, because you might not be allowed to do it yourself, which is probably pretty fair. You might say to mom or dad, can you guys Google Spartan poetry And they might look at it and they will read this website or some other websites and they'll find some Spartan poetry. And if they think that it's suitable for you, they might introduce you to some other ones. I found one that I enjoyed on this university website here. And so I thought, and it's nice and short, and I thought it'd be a nice way for us to capture a little bit of what it was like to be educated in Sparta. And so this is a poem called Walls and the City. And it's by a Spartan poet named Alcaeus of Mytilene. Who knows if I'm saying that right. From about 575 BC. Okay? So it's called Walls and the City. Okay, here we go. I'll read it and see what you think of it. Not homes with beautiful roofs, nor walls of permanent stone, nor canals and piers for ships make the city, but men of strength. Not stone and timber, nor skill of carpenter, but men brave who will handle sword and spear. With these you have city and walls. What do you think? What's the theme? Rosetta?
It's basically telling you, they're trying to like coax people into thinking that, well, they said like that the men make the city.
Yeah, but how do they make it? By building it and, you know, hammering nails into wood and stuff like that?
They make it by being strength and having a sword and spear.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So who makes the city? The carpenter or anybody else? Who is that? Who's that person with the sword and the spear and the strength?
The men?
Yeah, but the warrior. You see? Well, how do you get a wall? How do you get a city with its walls? How do you get a success? Basically, this the theme here, which is very interesting and very beautifully done in a way, is how do you get a society? How do you do it? How do you not be a barbarian? How do you have civilization instead of whatever all those horrible things that are out there? How do you, because that's what city and walls are. Right? In all of ancient history, to have a city was to settle down. To have walls was to be protected. And so that was to be civilized. So this is an amazing poem in a way because it captures what the Spartan view of life was. To be a civilized human being meant you had to be a warrior. Without the warrior, there are no walls. Without the warrior, there is no... Finish that sentence. Opal?
City.
Mm-hmm. Right. With these, if you have the warrior, you have a city and walls. Without, no. Yeah, so this is why Spartan education was focused on the physical training of the warrior, the toughness of the child, rather than the mental strength, right? Rather than the ingenuity and the other attributes and artistic talent or whatever else that you might enjoy. No, you've got to be strong because without that, there's no city, which means there's no civilization. That is the Spartan way of life. So you did that as a child. You got mostly physical education and you were kept in the government school for your entire childhood. No spending time with mommy. And your goal as a child was simple, very basic. When you graduated, so-called, at age 18, there was one goal. To be accepted into a Spartan platoon. Does anybody know what a platoon is? We have them in modern armies as well. What is a platoon? A platoon is a fighting unit that has a certain number of men. Maybe something like 20 or 30. And I don't know if that's always the case in every military, so it depends. So that's about a platoon. It's a fighting unit. And so when you graduated, you needed to be accepted into a platoon by the men who already were in it. They had to choose you. They had to want you to be in their platoon because they were already warriors and they had to welcome you into the community. And if nobody chose you, then after that, your life was a dead end. If you did not qualify for a platoon in Sparta, your life was a dead end. You would never become a true Spartiate because you would never qualify to be in the government. You would not be one of the Aristos if you were not a good enough warrior to be chosen for a platoon. So that was everything for a Spartiate. So nowadays, as your children, you know, your parents probably talking to you about different things, how you're homeschooling and you're learning certain subjects and eventually you're going to graduate. And most people, let's say in America, are very focused on the idea that you're going to go to college. You're going to go on and you're going to qualify and you're going to go get a degree. That's kind of how life works nowadays. Okay, but in Sparta, the whole goal of graduation was to get into the army. To be a real member of the army, that was the only way that you could be a full Spartan citizen. If you didn't do it, you could not really be a Spartan. And if you then, after you graduated, you survived until you were 30, then you were an Aristos. What a new definition of Aristos, right? Because remember, how did most people think kind of the Aristos? Or what's a very basic idea of the Aristos? Who thought that they were the best? Remember in Athens, and we're going to see that a lot also we're going to see it also in Rome, the Eupatrids. Who were the best? Rosetta?
Because they were related to, like, they were the ancestors of great Athenian warriors.
Yes, indeed. The sons of noble fathers, right? If you were a Spartan, who you were the son of did not matter. You had to earn the title of Aristos. You had to earn being the best. And that meant all the way from age 7 until age 30, training to be a great warrior. Singular focus. And then if you had done that, then you were an Aristos. Then you could be a member of the government. And possibly way on down the line, you might be an E4, you might be a king. All right, so this was the life of a Spartan. How does that sound? You want it? Does that sound like, you know, being the best is going to be a good thing? So what does that mean if basically as an individual you were owned by the government? Right? Your parents didn't have any right to you. Their job was to take care of you, baby you, until you were 7. And after that, the government takes you. You belong to the government. That's what Spartan aristocracy was. Wyatt, Henry?
No, I do not think I would like that.
Yeah, that's a pretty standard, very American answer of you there, Wyatt. Certainly, right? I mean, that is the instinctive answer. Patrick?
I feel like it's a stupid, bad thing.
Oh my, okay. You're very opposed to this idea. But I tell you what, that is a tricky word, the word stupid. And we have to be careful of using that word And no, it was not, in a sense. And that's what we're going to have to talk about in the last class next week on Sparta. Because what the Spartans were doing was making their city, right? The walls and the city. You can't have the city. You can't have civilization without the ability to defend it. And what we're going to learn about in a few weeks' time is that if the Spartans hadn't defended civilization, none of us would be here. So, there is a challenging thought. Julia, your comments?
I was just wondering, were women accepted into platoons as well?
No. So, okay. we'll talk about the life of women next time, and we'll wrap this up in terms of the whole story of life in Sparta. So they were completely separate. So, all right. Well, interesting, is it not? I mean, it's so completely different from our modern life, and yet fascinating to see the difference. Okay, thanks everybody. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye.